Hey, everybody, welcome back, and thanks for tuning in to this edition of Leading Through Unprecedented Times. With me today, so excited to have Superintendent Jerry Almendez from Santa Ana in California with us today. Incredible leader, doing amazing work. Jerry, it is such an honor to have you here today. Can you tell our audience just a little bit about who you are, where you're from, and the work that you do?
Yes, again, my name is Jerry Almendez, Superintendent Santa Ana Unified School District. I come from the Inland Empire, small town called City of Colton, and where I was born and raised, and I served over 25 years in their public school system there, the last 10 as superintendent, and I'm very proud to be here in my new assignment at Santa Ana for approximately 4 months.
Great. Well, it's awesome to have you here, Jerry. And, you know, one of the things that I've respected your leadership, and I've watched it from afar, I've known you for a few years. You are an incredible beacon of hope for those that you serve. Your calm demeanor, the way that you lead, the way that you involve people. So many people look to you. You now serve in this very large district, almost 50,000 students, somewhere in that range. And you're this beacon of hope at a time that people need it most. You know, when we look out of our windows, we've got so much fear. There's so many aspects of our world that are just uncertain. We're living at a time where we don't know when things will open back up. We don't know what school's going to look like in the future. What is it right now that gives you hope in the work that you're doing?
Well, I think the thing that gives me hope is just to see the desire and the need of our community and our students. We're a high socioeconomically disadvantaged, even though we're in Southern California, Orange County, there's still a lot of personal need here. And I think having the ability to recognize and to get support from a lot of the staff and community members, the community leaders, just to reach out and to focus on how do we meet the needs of those students and those families that we're serving. And so it's been a pleasure and very inspirational to see and hear the people that are contacting us, trying to reach out and provide as much support as they can.
So let's talk about some of those. And I'm not surprised, by the way, that you started by talking with people. You are one of those, you always bring it back to people, and it's just so much of what I respect about your work. But let's talk about some of the obstacles in Santa Ana that you've had related to this current crisis. And so when we look at your population, when we look at the past number of weeks related to the shutdowns and school closures, you know, the teaching and learning on a remote, the students that we're worried about, what are some of the major obstacles you've been working through, and what have you been doing to overcome them?
So I think two big challenges that we have is things happen so quickly. Literally, we were talking about closing schools on a Thursday, and then we shut down the following Monday. So we had very little time to kind of process the changes that were happening. Some of the challenges, the two biggest challenges, are the connectivity and the access to the internet that a lot of our families are challenged with. And also the capacity of our teaching staff and their ability to adapt to those quick changes as well. And so those are some of the things that, you know, we'd like to think we were prepared for, but because things happen so quickly, you know, we quickly discovered the challenges that we have. And the devices and their capacity, the hotspots and the amount of hotspots that we were prepared to distribute. And then how do we collect the information from the families that we could reach and get that information from them so we could provide those support. So just, the student access and the teacher capacity are two big issues.
Sure, absolutely. You know, and one of the things that I've always respected about your leadership, Jerry, is equity is always such a core theme to your work, you know, prioritizing those that are most at risk or, you know, our traditionally marginalized groups, and knowing that you serve such a diverse audience, our audience wouldn't be the right word there, such a diverse group and diverse set of families there in Santa Ana. What are you doing to prioritize those students to make sure that the opportunity gap doesn't continue to widen? You know, you mentioned connectivity, maybe from a teaching and learning end. What are you doing to really prioritize our students that are most at risk during this crisis?
You know, we're trying to collect the accurate data. So, there's one thing to be able to contact a family and get access that way. It's another thing to actually identify. A lot of times students and families don't want to tell us what their situation is at home. A lot of times there's multiple levels of students within a household and multiple families within a household. Some of the challenges that we're having is that when teachers begin to access and hold class online, a lot of the students don't want to physically be present. They'll be present via the audio. And in some cases, it's because they're embarrassed about their situation and they don't want people to see what they're having to deal with. So how we're prioritizing is basically just asking our site administrators and our community members to reach out to us. We've set up hotlines. We've asked them to identify the families and the students that have that need the support and the access. And then we're prioritizing in that respect. We're also looking at more permanent solutions in working with the city of Santa Ana and some of the chamber members to provide permanent solutions like citywide Wi-Fi access and hotspots in our most needy areas. So we've identified parts of the city that are that need it the most, and we're hoping that we be tactical in providing those resources and that support to those areas.
Yeah, and you know, Jerry, when I think about the community partnerships that you're referencing there, I think about things I've seen coming out of Santa Ana on social media. I know you've all created this resource hub because the communication, you really want to be accurate. You want all your families to have it. I've seen things come out in multiple languages. Talk to us a little bit about your communication strategy, if you would, from your leadership teams to your community so that people know that they have the accurate information at a time where there's so much false information out there. What does that look like in Santa Ana, and how are you ensuring really proper lines of communication?
Yeah, so we, at the very beginning of this crisis, there was a lot of initial offers of help, and very quickly we discovered that there were a lot of people trying to take advantage of people during this time. So what we've done is we've set up a communication structure within the district where all of the appropriate personnel are able to communicate almost instantly. And there are various products out there that I can name. We use a particular product where I have instant access to my admin team and my directors and coordinators. So what we've asked them to do is, because periodically they would post stuff on social media and we would see it and we would say, that's not what we approved, or where did this come from? So we've streamlined that and we've centralized that information. But the other thing that we've emphasized is the emphasis on the use of social media, and not just one platform, all platforms. So we have the social media feeds for those families that we don't have, that don't have access to that. We have the phone calls home to the families, redirecting them to the hotlines where they can access a real person and ask questions, and they get directed to the appropriate places. And then we have a very good partnership with the city of Santa Ana that also helps contribute to that informational information pool, and then they have hotlines themselves. So we've done a variety of different things. I think the biggest thing that we've learned over this short period of time is that it's so important to be in constant communication with your leadership team, with the governance team, because the more information everybody has, the better decisions they'll be able to make.
Yeah, I've just really enjoyed watching you and your team lead that. Is it's almost leave no stone unturned. It's not, we're going to communicate just this one way, because you recognize for particular set of your families, that one way might not work. So it's really and, but also constant or continuous messaging on multiple platforms that's really aligned with your leadership and those kinds of things there. So, you know, kudos to you all for that. Let me ask you about fear. You know, anytime we open an app, we look at something in the news, we watch some news clip on TV, fear is just so real right now. But you're in a position as a superintendent, you've got, not to remind you here, but you've got an entire community looking to you to be the calm, to give direction, to have the answers at time. How do you, as the superintendent, work to overcome fear? And what recommendations do you have for teachers or for principals that are battling it themselves?
You know, it's real. I tell you, the fear is real. And, you know, a lot of, I just look at all of the, like the first responders, I look at the nutritional service workers, the people that are actually out physically out there on the front lines. And I think, and are reflective on how they don't hesitate to go out there and to make sure that our community has food. Our first responders are keeping everybody safe, our nurses, our medical. And I'm thinking, here I am, you know, the head of a large urban district. If those people can do that, I can definitely do that. And but it's always in the back of my mind. You know, I have a family, I have elderly parents, and, you know, that's a challenge as well. But to overcome that fear, I just constantly think about the faces and the students and the families in the community that we serve. And I think that, you know, they're relying on somebody to get them through this process. And so the least I can do is stir up enough courage in my in myself to help facilitate that process. And by all means, am I not strong enough to get this through this by myself? I have a wonderful team here in Santa Ana Unified. And when one of us is down, the others pick us up, pick each other up. And, you know, there are more days where there are challenges for me personally, and then, but somebody else will step up. And I think, you know, the fear is that, you know, getting not only myself, if I feel that way, how do my principals feel? How do the assistant principals feel? How do the teachers feel? And so each and every day and each and every week, there's somebody that kind of just pats us on the shoulder and just says, come on, we can do this. And that reminds us that, you know, we're here for a reason. So, constantly every day trying to make it through one day at a time.
And that right there is a true mindset of collaborative leadership, part of our Future Ready framework, and just noticing that we are in this together and recognizing that. And even as the superintendent, recognizing fear is real and that's okay, but together we can do this. And so let me ask you a personal question on your end. You know, being a superintendent, you are always on your vacation days, you are still on. And so how do you take care of yourself in this process? Educators are those people that go and they go and they go until they have nothing left. And when we start to think about remote learning or those kinds of things, it could easily become 24/7. And we look back weeks at a time and we haven't paused for ourselves or reinvested in our own families. What do you do to set some of those boundaries or just to take care of yourself in this process? I know educators are so selfless that sometimes they forget to do that. So what do you do that? Or what recommendations do you have for educators to do that?
You know, it's one of those practice what you preach type of thoughts and conversations. So I tell my principals, you know, my team that all the time. It's like, we have to take care of ourselves in order to take care of others. But having said that, you know, it's not always reflected in my daily calendar. And so oftentimes I sit back after the day is over and at 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and I'm thinking, okay, where did the day go? You know, I'm telling people to take care of themselves, but I'm not taking care of myself. And I tell you where I get reminded, and it really hits personal, is that when I'm out walking or I'm in a meeting or I'm doing something, and then all of a sudden I start to get a little lightheadedness, or all of a sudden my heart starts to beat a little bit quicker, and I'm thinking, okay, is this it? You know, because sometimes these symptoms are warning signs, and sometimes it's just stress. And I can't tell you how many times I've been in situations where I've been in a doctor's office and one of the questions they ask me is, okay, what do you do? And I tell them I'm a superintendent, and their response typically is, we see a lot of you people in here, you know. And so I just have to constantly remind myself, I think having a good support network, giving permission to my administrative assistants, my executive assistants, to say, you know what, you need to slow down. My wife is also a good reminder of that. And oftentimes she will tell me to put the phone down or to unplug and spend some time, you know. And then I have a grandson and my family, my daughter and son, who also remind me periodically. But the bottom line is just to have that support network that reminds you of what's important. And then listen to your body when your body starts to tell you things. Because what I tell my administrators is, sometimes these signs are irreversible, and you have to make sure that you listen and you do the things that you need to do to take care of yourself so you can take care of others. But
yeah, Well said, my friend. And if we are to invest in the lives of other people, we have to invest in ourselves in the same process. And so well said. And sometimes we do need those wake up calls from families or friends saying, like, knock it off. You got to focus back here. And sometimes I think we all need that. And so thank you for your vulnerability and sharing that there as well. So a couple more questions for you. I want to ask one thing I see you do nonstop. You know, when we were back in schools every day on social media, I saw you in classrooms. I saw you sharing things out. It is so evident how proud you are of your staff, of your leadership team, of your teachers, of, you know, your support staff and those on the front lines. What is it right now in the midst of this crisis that you could say you're most proud of related to your team? What would you say there?
Well, I would say that I'm most proud of how people have, risen up and have ran to the emergency, ran to the fire, as opposed to running away from it. There are things happening. You know, I have to be careful sometimes because we share thoughts when we come together as a team, and we'll think about how can we come out of this different than we went in, and we'll just have a conversation. And then a few days later, I'll get a plan, and I'm like, man, this was just a thought. You guys have already developed a plan. And they're saying, yeah, you know, here's an idea that we have, and here's some things that we could implement if this is the direction we want to go. So I think just having that sense of camaraderie, and I think people have been, because we've been communicating on such a regular basis, people are able to read the emotions and the tones of other people. And so when a decision is close to being made, I think people start to rally around defining what that looks like, and then having options for myself or executive cabinet to be able to roll that out very thoughtfully and tactfully.
Yeah, and I think what you just displayed there is a sign of empowering others to lead and empowering others to run and trusting them in that process there as well. So one final question for you. You know, in the midst of all the chaos that's on the outside of our world, when we think about our teachers, when we think about our principals, what's one piece of advice that no matter where they are, no matter what their role is, no matter how they're serving, that you would give them right now?
You know, I reflect on this every day because I always say, why me? Why us? And, you know, it's just the fact that you're not alone. You know, none of us really have a lot of answers, and it gets frustrating. And I get frustrated too. Almost every day, a new bit of information comes out, new guidelines come out, and then they change. But just be reflective in the fact that you're not alone. We're not alone. And we're going to get through this together, and that it is going to look different. We're going to have a new normal. And I would much rather us work together to define what that new normal is, as opposed to having it being given to us. Because what works best in the culture of our district may not be what works best in a neighboring district. So just hang in there. Work together. You're not alone. Reach out to your colleagues. Ask them what they're doing. Let's get the best ideas, and then let's share them, and let's make decisions that are best for us.
You are not alone. Amazingly powerful statement. Couldn't agree more. That's Jerry Almendarez, everybody. And Jerry, such a pleasure having you here. Thank you for your time today, and keep leading the way.